numbers were roughly about 53% to 45%. That's the same numbers that tracked for the early voting. So we anticipate that the absentee ballot count will reflect those same trends.
You got to remember also all these voters. I mean, all these people that sent absentees and, you know, did the application process. We got to get every vote counted here. We owe it to them, too, to get a full result here.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And despite the pandemic, despite the unrest in the streets, we had a primary on Tuesday in New York. On this episode, we'll speak with the candidates for Albany County DA about where the race goes next and have a similar conversation with the candidates in New York's 108th State Assembly seat. Let's begin with my conversation with Albany County District Attorney David Soares, who's running for a fifth four-year term.
The state of the race is very good from my perspective. We went to bed last night with a lead, I believe, about 1,200 votes, with 17,000 absentee ballots still to be counted. The numbers were roughly about 53% to 45%. That's the same numbers that tracked for the early voting, so we anticipate that the absentee ballot count will reflect those same trends.
This is obviously an election like we haven't seen before, with a huge jump in the amount of absentee ballots. So what makes you think that the margin will hold on that front?
Well, I mean, prior history demonstrates that absentee ballots tend to reflect the same trends that you see at the machines. And I think what the difference here is the fact that we have more volume. So we anticipate the same outcome once the ballots are counted.
Have you spoken with Matt Toporowski in the last day?
I'm not. Nope.
Okay. I just want to get a sense of where the campaigns are. So are you declaring victory in the race?
Well, listen, I don't take anything for granted. As an incumbent, I never took that for granted. I work for every vote that I have. I believe that our good policy and the strength of our performance as an agency dictates my politics. And so I'm reflecting confidence in the fact that I'm confident in the 71 plus people that show up at that office every day and have been working hard for the last 16 years to deliver a service to Albany County. And so I'm very confident in that regard. So in terms of the vote, the responses that we've gotten from our calls, any contact that we've had with voters, which of course, because of COVID, has been limited. There are great things that we hear at the doors as well as on the phones. And so I have reason to be confident.
The State Board of Elections told us it would be very foolish to expect any result Tuesday night or early Wednesday. I'm wondering what kind of advice your campaign has gotten about how long it will take until we actually have a finished result here.
Well, this is unique in the sense that this year, the date for which ballots had to be postmarked was last night. So I would figure the earliest that they would be delivered to the board would be perhaps on Friday, and perhaps Monday would be the beginning of counting day.
So it seems like you would be very surprised at this point to not win this race.
Listen, in my line of business, you don't know what you're walking into in the morning, and you certainly don't know what you're walking out of the office to. So I'm not a person who it can be surprised, you know. So we always plan for the best and hope for the best, but we deal with whatever it is that we're confronted with. And that's pretty much the job description of a prosecutor.
You know, this particular primary got a lot of attention. And if the margins are what they are right now, in the end, definitely one of your closer races. What did you learn during this process and, you know, including the criticism that you got?
Well, I've never run a campaign before where the talking points used by the opposition were, in fact, my 2004 talking points. I've also never run a campaign where there's been out-and-out lies. And so it's difficult when you're in a professional setting on a platform where you're looking to debate the merits of very important topical issues, but you're having to deal with misrepresentations and lies. And so this one has been very different for the reasons that I've just stated. My previous opponents They had observations and criticisms of the way that the office functioned. They had observations and differences in opinions as to policy. This was one of the more interesting campaigns in the sense that someone is running on very aspirational and not actual practical or from a knowledge base of a prosecutor's office. I mean, the idea that you want to, reduce the investigatory staff of a district attorney's office in a population of a community with 300,000 people demonstrates incredible naivete. But again, all of those things sounded very aspirational as this defund the police movement is getting some energy. So, it was a very unique race, very unique set of issues. I've actually never run against the person who's pledged to do the things that I'm doing now, like my marijuana policy, my restorative justice practices. So this has been a very unique race, but I'm glad that the people of Albany County saw through it.
You know, you had your endorsements and your opponent had his endorsements. Why do you think so many elected officials went with your opponent?
I don't recall so many elected officials going with my opponent. I recall celebrities that don't live in Albany County and federal. I think you had two. Was it two?
Well, I mean, in fairness, the mayor is a high-profile person.
You said many, and not profile, but you said many. And I believe he had two. And the mayor, that was an interesting call because in a city that is absolutely on fire with 24 people reporting to the emergency room with bullet wounds, that the mayor would choose to endorse a candidate for the most important public safety position that addresses violence in her city, the fact that the mayor would go with someone who's had very little to no prosecutorial experience over a group of people that have been in the office keeping her city safe prior to her being mayor for a period of over 20 years, that to me is startling, but reflects more on her judgment than it does on my performance.
Assuming that you do come in for a fifth term after the absentee ballots are counted, what's your top priority for the next 4 years?
Well, listen, we are in the most, I feel, important window in all of my time in this office. And that window is reforming police practices, reforming, even criminal justice practices, which I have had a history of doing my entire 16 years as a DA and even the five previous years as an assistant DA. Now, so more than ever, this requires a person with prosecutorial experience as well as experience taking on institutions and other elected positions. And if you can say anything about me that the people are familiar with, it's the fact that people know that I've battled with politicians, I've battled with police chiefs, I've battled with institutions, and I would continue to do that to bring about the change that I believe is so necessary right now. And the idea that anyone in Albany County could choose someone with little to no experience or track record, it even has a problem with the truth, that to me is astounding. So I anticipate returning to office. I anticipate continuing my mission in protecting communities and engaging in smart reforms.
Just one more thing. You mentioned the rash of shootings that we've seen in the city of Albany in the last couple of weeks. The mayor, the police chief have been, urging a halt to this. From your perspective, how do you get a handle on something like gun violence at a time like this?
Well, what you don't do is call a press conference and have a TED talk. What you do is you reach out to your fellow law enforcement agencies. Let's remember something now, okay? I've been here before this current mayor. I've been in this position as an ADA delivering public safety services to Albany County for 20 years. And the way that you curb gun violence, because we've done that before, is by making sure that we have the full breadth of law enforcement services in the Capital District providing public safety, which means you have wonderful people at the New York State Police Department. You have wonderful people at the Albany County Sheriff's Department that you should be calling in right now, today, to engage in a greater presence in the neighborhoods that are experiencing drive-by shootings, in the neighborhoods where the errant bullets are finding children in their beds. That's what you do, because that's what my experience in public safety for 20 years, that's what my experience tells me. That's also what we've done in the past to curb gun violence. And so the mayor, instead of having press conferences and having TED Talks, she needs to pick up the phone and call the superintendent of the New York State Police and call Sheriff Craig Apple.
Assuming you're back for another term, will you have to patch things up with the mayor? I mean, you know, you're a high-profile public official in Albany County, the DA. She's the mayor of a city that's dealing with its own issues right now. But it sounds like the two of you are not in communication.
The people of Albany County and the people of the city of Albany did not elect me to engage in hostilities with any other elected personalities in Albany County. I'm a professional person. If anything, my history and my record reflects my ability to work with everyone. You will also have to delve into your history books to also see that when I first came into office, I had very few allies, and I had a lot of other enemies and political enemies in high elected office. But over the years, my record and our ability to work together in a sense of achievement and accomplishment, we've weathered through all those storms. I don't have to have tea or have coffee with someone to work with them. But the city of Albany is just as much my responsibility, my focus, and my obligation to the citizens here are just as much, if not more, than any other elected official. So I'll continue to work with people as long as what we're doing is the best that we possibly can do for the citizens. But right now, we're not doing our best because we don't have every resource available to us.
All right, that was David Soares. Now let's go to his challenger in the race, Matt Toporowski. Matt, what is the state of the race from your point of view right now?
From our point of view, you know, it's a reflection that we ran a very strong campaign. You know, over 6,000 people voted for me. We're just about 1,100 or so votes behind, and there's still 28,000 ballots out there. So, you know, at this point, we still believe that we're in this race, and that these absentees will come in, and we'll start to see a reflection of the strong message we brought to the race, and just kind of get more of a sense of where we're at. But I think, you know, from a get-go here at the polls, you know, we won a few election districts, and we got to wait to see where these absentees fall.
So you're nowhere close to conceding the race at this point.
No way. I mean, not at all. You know, you got to remember also all these voters. I mean, all these people that sent absentees and, you know, did the application process. We got to get every vote counted here. We owe it to them, too, to get a full result here. And right now we're far from it. I mean, 28,000 are out there, and we've only had just 15,000 or so come in, 17,000. So the majority of the ballots are still out there.
There's a conventional wisdom that mostly absentee ballots hew to what we see in-person voting, you know, in past elections at least. So how do you make up the difference here?
Well, I've heard that, you know, and that may be true generally speaking, but I think we have to remember that, you know, the political climate that we're in and that the winds of change have been blowing here very strongly in the last few months, and certainly during the time period where people were sending in their absentee ballots. And, you know, what we've done is talk to a few other campaigns that have had some absentee balloting down in Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, and sort of a rural/city area similar to Albany. And what we heard is that, you know, the absentees were favoring the challenger down there in a race similar to ours, and the challenger actually won on the absentee ballots. And, you know, from what I've heard, when Chase Boudin ran in San Francisco, he was also down at the polls, and then the absentees came in and they put him over the top, and he won that DA's race there. So, you know, we are definitely still hopeful and looking forward to see where these ballots come in. But, you know, we also have other anecdotal stories where they favor challengers.
Since you brought his name up, he's a very interesting district attorney. His parents were famously in the Weather Underground and served jail time. He's come in with a lot of reforms in San Francisco. Would you say that he's a model for you should you become the next DA in Albany?
Well, I think a lot of the changes he's put in place in his office have shown to be effective on the stats, on the data, that they're have been able to reduce crime there, make people more safe by, again, focusing on some of these root causes, root drivers of crime, substance abuse, mental health issues. I mean, he helped get people out of the jails, the local jails there, early during the pandemic, which, again, saved a bunch of lives and crime did not go up. And so there's certainly many policies that he's put in place that have been proven to be effective at keeping people safe and having strong communities. I've been looking to see what he's accomplished there, and if elected, hope to, put a lot of the same progressive policies in place here.
You have it's a political position you're running for. How much attention did your campaign put on getting the vote out in absentee ballots, knowing that people would, some people would be voting in early voting, some people would be doing day of, and then many more would be voting by mail for the first time?
Well, like any campaign, we focused on that voter contact. And so what we did was just build a very strong calling program and texting program, and we're able to energize those callers. A lot of them were young people from, other campaigns. Some were from the Warren campaign. Some were actually down in Brooklyn, but we're still making calls up here. And so we had a very strong voter contact program, and we just kept blasting through these lists of absentee voters, permanent absentees, people who had requested their ballots. I mean, we were getting daily updates from the BOE on the names of the people who had requested, and we started calling them. So, again, that's why we got to wait to see these ballots come in, because we put such a hard effort into reaching these voters, and we got a lot of good responses on the phones. We kept hearing this: "It's time for a change. I'm ready for a change."
If you are able to defeat David Soares and then win the general election, and we should say in Albany, oftentimes November's general election is really just a perfunctory election because there's such overwhelming Democratic enrollment in the city and in the county, for that matter. If you are able to go in and change that office, how confident are you that, you'll be received well by people who've been working for D.A. Soares, for the last generation?
Well, look, I know that there's a lot of people there that are committed to public service. And what I plan to do if I win is come in, speak with these people, and let them know, if you want to be here, you're going to have a place here. My vision is definitely different from where it's been, and I'm hoping you'll join me in this effort. In fact, I'm going to need you to accomplish this. And so I hope that, a positive approach, a different approach to criminal justice, one that's not just focused on punishment, over-policing, calling for more police, as the DA is now doing, that'll resonate with some of these prosecutors there, maybe some of the younger prosecutors there. There definitely will be a shift in leadership there. But I'm confident in that. I mean, I know some of these lawyers there. We've worked together in the past, and I've never had a bad relationship with any lawyer in this legal community. We have a great legal community in Albany County, really the capital region. And so, I'm confident in that. I don't tend to go in there and start lopping off heads. I tend to go in and asking people to join me. I certainly get a change in leadership and bringing some more lawyers of color back onto the staff, diversifying the leadership and the lawyers making decisions on the front lines.
Matt, you have the backing of the Working Families Party in this race. If you lose the Democratic primary to David Soares when all of the votes are counted, would you continue on to the general?
No, I think at this point, I'm respecting the democratic process and the nomination. And, I want to support, whoever goes forward, any Democrat here that goes forward to the general. I think that I've made that clear, when I was at the Democratic convention locally. I do respect that process, so I don't intend to go forward on the Working Families line. I'm pushing to win this nomination here.
What did you learn about, the needs of this community, the needs of the county, as you were campaigning over the last few months?
I'll tell you, Ian, honestly, I've met with so many people over the course of this campaign, and the common theme, the common thread I keep getting back from people across the board, elected officials, community leaders, fellows in the criminal justice system, other professionals in there, is that they don't have a real relationship with this DA's office. It's all window dressing. There's no returning of phone calls or responding to letters written. There's a real lack of relationships. And I think this is reflected. It is reflected in the surge, the recent gun violence in the city of Albany, because the DA's approach now, my opponent, he just says, let's send more police in. And the reality is we know that a community-based approach to serious crime is more effective. It's proven. And in fact, after a lot of this initial violence, you heard elected leaders that know that to be true, like the police chief, Mayor Sheehan, calling on the community. We need your help. We need your help. And so I've been building the community relationships throughout this campaign. And what has been so startling to me is that there's literally, no relationship with this DA's office. In fact, there's a real lack of trust, as illustrated by Dr. Alice Green's, report on structural racism, which the DA ignored. And so this is an elected official that doesn't want to be accountable to the people, that doesn't want to answer to the people. And that's a real problem.
On a human level, is it torture right now waiting for these absentee ballots? I mean, you've normally by Tuesday night, we'd know you either won or you lost.
For me, this is a moment of pride. I mean, I gave this campaign everything I had. I put it all on the line every day for months. And I just am sitting back and reflecting on, the national endorsements that we got, the local endorsements from not just Mayor Sheehan, but from County Legislator Carolyn McLaughlin, Assembly Member Phil Steck, Council Member Alfredo Ballarin, Judy Deschette, and then, all these national endorsements as well, Bernie, Zephyr, Cynthia Nixon, and then the organizational support, Albany County Young Democrats, the Working Families Party, like you mentioned, Better Prosecutors PAC, and the fact that we raised over $125,000 in this race as a first-time candidate amid a worldwide global pandemic, and that people are voting for change, that we've brought a strong message, and that we've always been on the issues in this race. We didn't launch political attacks. We didn't lob these last-minute attempts to throw voters off the issues. We stayed on the issues. I ran a good, clean campaign, and I'm just looking back on, how many people we've touched, how many people supported the campaign, and win or lose, Ian, I know that many of the people that have supported this campaign, either on it or voted for it, they're going to go forward in their own way, in their own communities, and always be active in criminal justice reform, and to me, that's a win.
Last thing, Soares in our interview suggested that you were untrustworthy, that you hadn't told the truth about how you exited his office in a series of articles that was written by the Times Union. What was your reaction to that?
Again, I think it's a political attack because the reality is they weren't happy with my performance there, and I wasn't happy with how they wanted to handle cases there. It was a fundamental disagreement that they over-prosecute and over-punish. That's what they recommended to me to do in meetings with supervisors. And it's reflected in the Vera Institute's data. We've had a high incarceration rate under Soares. It stayed up there. And so I left. They said, you should think about resigning. I said, okay, I'll resign. And I left. So I don't think that was me not telling the truth. In fact, what I saw was as the DA's office really abusing their power, saying we can't talk about personnel matters, but then doing it. And not only the DA himself doing it, but then sending out employees to do it, which is to me, there's some campaign issues with that. He's having employees campaign. They're coming out and saying stuff, and that's a real issue. And so when you have someone who's in an elected position, the most powerful position that in the criminal justice system that could take your freedom, abusing the power in this way to win an election, people should be concerned with that.
An interesting race this spring pitted former Cohoes Mayor and New York State Assemblyman John McDonald in a Democratic primary against Albany County Legislator Sam Fine. I spoke with McDonald early Tuesday.
From our perspective, and we've got some of the district numbers that were not reported to the State Board of Elections, we have a 11 percentage point lead, which is good. And it's something that we expect to build upon. There's a significant amount of absentee ballots out there. Altogether, about a little over 5,000 votes came through the door yesterday, and that's inclusive of early voting. We're looking at probably 4,800 absentee ballots that voters sent in an intentional way over the last couple of weeks. Might even grow a little bit because yesterday was the day that you could mail your ballot in. So we look forward to the opening of those absentee ballots. This is a very interesting year. Traditionally, and I've been through elections 9 different times, you would have 11,000 votes in a race like this, and there would be a handful, maybe a couple hundred of absentee ballots, which usually would run the direction of what came through on election day.
In other words, the margins would be what they were in the in-person voting, more or less.
Would not be a significant change. I think in this COVID era, I think that changes. I think actually a lot of thoughtful, deliberative individuals, people who are probably more conservative in their thinking, were very intentional in sending in their absentee ballots. I know many people that have been elected officials, supporters, told me, my vote's there already. You're going to have it on when they open up the absentees. We're not going to go to the polls. So in looking at the list, because we're able to foil that information, I see a lot of familiar names, people who have been supportive for decades now. So I look at that as an opportunity. I also look at the fact that, Albany is usually a draw when it comes to this race, but outside of Albany, where the majority of the absentee ballots are, I think they're going to be even stronger to our campaign. So, at the end of the day, I don't know the total outcome yet. We will know hopefully in a week or so. I'm a little bit more interested in the process that's about ready to ensue because I'm getting we haven't gotten clarification if it's going to be opening up each individual ballot individually and checking them like they normally do, or are they going to run them through the machine like they're supposed to be done, like they would normally do. I shouldn't say normally do, what the new normal would be. These are ballots just like they were run through the machine when you and I walked in on election day. Is that what they're going to do, or are they going to open up each individual one and inspect them? Because absentees have always been put under a much tighter scrutiny than the votes that went through the machines.
Have you spoken with Sam Fine, the county legislator who ran against you in this primary?
No, I haven't had the opportunity.
Okay, because I'm listening closely to what you're saying. You're not declaring victory yet, right?
Oh, no, not at all. That's very premature to do that. What I'm recognizing is there's an 11-point lead with all the districts' information that I have. And, we look at the absentees, and I don't think that's going to detract from that lead. But we'll see what happens.
What do you think was the main issue in this race? What were you hearing from voters?
From voters, I heard nothing but support. My opponent was really actually, in his own words, said that pretty much we're aligned on the issues. He just would like to be more louder about the issues, which is fine, and that's a choice that elected officials can choose to do. My rule of thumb, and it's probably because of my nature of running a business and running a city, is that, I listen, I internalize and take in all points of view, and then I cast my vote. And on issues where it's in my bailiwick, where my strength is, yeah, I'll be a little bit more louder than normal. But on the other hand, as you might know, because you cover the Capitol, there's more than enough people trying to clamor to the microphone to get their 15 minutes of fame. I don't worry about 15 minutes of fame. My focus is on voting the will of the public. And as Sam admitted, on the issues, we're very much aligned. So that being said, my focus on this race was really not focusing on my opponent. It was focusing on what I've done and what I continue to want to do, representing the individuals in the 108th Assembly District.
Let's talk about how elections are run while we're in this post-primary haze, but still waiting for the primary absentee ballots to be counted. Presumably, we're going to have potentially a problem in this country in November, where people go to bed on election night and have no idea what direction the country is going in yet. This is a small, relatively small assembly race where we're not going to open these ballots at least until July 1. What about on a large national election with all these different jurisdictions and boards of election? And, there's always issues on election day. What are you learning from this process about our fall election?
So, it's interesting. And you raise a very good question that involves a little bit of thought. If you look back historically, at least I can speak from my experience, the issues on election day was people trying to go to vote, not know where to go vote, and then whatever other hijinks people are up to. As we move away from voting in person on that day to maybe either continuing to grow the early voting or to do more of a movement towards mail-in voting, we are going to get to a process, I believe, if properly done, will reduce that confusion or aggravation or that people are so used to doing. What is going to change? And it's a difficult change. It's a difficult change for myself, who has always followed elections, and you love the drama and the thrill of the victory on election night. And that's not going to happen. it's just not going to happen as much anymore. Unless it's an extremely wide margin. I find it a little bit disturbing that the Board of Elections isn't today opening up the absentee ballots that were already mailed in over the last 2 weeks. I don't see any reason why they can't. I understand they want to wait a week to make sure everything drifts in, and I get that because of overseas ballots. I fully support that. But I don't know why we're waiting a week to open up these ballots that have been there, that can be properly authenticated. And in all fairness to the poor folks who work at the Board of Elections, just in the three different county board of elections that I worked through in this election for the 108th Assembly District, there's going to be 4,800 absentee ballots that have to be opened. And what is the process? My understanding is if one of the two parties contests just running them through the machine and wants to open up each individual one, you're putting a large undue stress on individuals. In that board, and it will drag out what could have taken 2 or 3 hours to be 3 or 4 days. So it's going to be interesting. This is a learning curve. This is like the JV game before the varsity game when it comes to the primary and a general election. But the thought of waking up the day after the election and not knowing who's going to be the president, I think it's becoming a reality. Although the world doesn't end. Life moves on. And within a shorter period of time, we're going to know.
Well, as long as you know by January 20th.
Well, yeah, but in all fairness, if you remember back when George Bush ran the first time against Al Gore, we didn't really know until the end of December.
Yep.
So, the history is a good educator. We need to be mindful of that. What I want to focus on is to make sure that we expand mail-in options and no excuse absentee, which we have a record of supporting, and we want to make sure that they're also not subject to being abused by political operatives, because that has always been traditionally the bad dark cloud over absentee ballots, is that political operatives would use that to snooker the unknown, whether it's those who are unaware or the elderly. Everyone's vote is sacred, and we need to be very, very respectful of that.
Well, to that end, we've heard a lot of anecdotal reports of people who requested the absentee ballot, didn't get one in time, or they were confused about when it had to be postmarked by. I know the legislature allowed postmarks of the absentee ballots as late as Tuesday.
Yeah.
But should lawmakers come back before November's elections, assuming we're going to be doing another mail-in vote, assuming the pandemic is still, spreading and so on? If we're going to have a fall election like the one we've just had here, are there things that should be fixed legislatively?
Well, I think, the fact that we actually extended the mailing to the actual day of election, I think was a very good thing. That's not the way things have always been with absentees. So I think that's already a lesson learned. I think, Ian, to your question, I think we really need to identify, who didn't get an absentee? Did you follow the process? Because understandably, there was a lot of confusion during this process. There are people who didn't know they had to fill out an application to get an absentee. There are individuals who had no idea that even though they filled out the absentee, that they could still vote in person. And there were many people out there who thought they couldn't vote in person at all, irrespective. And, that was conflated with the fact that the school board was write-in only. So the public was definitely confused. We need to do a better job of being more clearer about it. And if, in fact, people did not receive ballots that they requested, that's going to require a deeper dive, deeper investigation. And whether it's regulation or statutory language that had to be considered, we would look into it. But we need to get our facts first. That's the most important thing. And as we're talking about public policy. we also live in a political environment. We live in a hyper-political environment where, you know, whether it's within our own party squabbles, where, you know, one group may be more vocal than the other, or whether it's between the traditional Democrat and Republican parties, you know, there's a lot of hyperbole that sometimes gets thrown into the mix, which causes more confusion. We need to sort through that and really get to the issue, because at the end of the day, irrespective of what your political beliefs are or where your leanings are, we all agree that every individual that's a citizen in this country has their right to vote, and we never, ever should put that at risk.
New York State Assemblyman John McDonald of the 108th District talking about the Democratic primary, and let's say it's to be continued because we still have to find out what those absentees say.
Yeah. I agree. It's to be continued. No one should be declaring victory, and I appreciate the time.
Now let's hear from Sam Fine, McDonald's opponent in the race.
It's a close race. We're down right now about 466 votes with pretty much everything reported, but likely more than half of the votes aren't yet counted. There's almost 5,000 absentee ballots that have been returned, likely more to come. They won't start to be open for a week. So we're feeling really good about it. Want to make sure that every vote is counted. We did a lot of outreach to voters, to people who are voting absentee, and we're feeling really good about where we're at.
I spoke with Assemblyman McDonald this morning. He's not claiming victory, but he says he feels very confident that when the absentees are opened, his current lead will hold. What's your reaction to that?
I think there's a lot of uncertainty right now with about half the ballots counted. I think it's, can't really say too much about where we're at, but we're confident that we have a really good shot that we're going to come out on top when all the ballots are counted. But right now, we're just, we want to make sure every vote's counted, and then we'll take it from there.
How did the move to absentee balloting in this campaign, because of the pandemic, change your approach?
It changed. I'd say what changed the approach more was the fact that everything was so virtual, that there wasn't really in-person campaigning. So we made a lot of phone calls. We did a lot of virtual events, a lot of social media. But the absentee piece of it, didn't change the aspect of campaigning as much as the fact that everything was so virtual.
Now, you've been saying, and other candidates we've been speaking with today have said, it's really important to get every vote counted. How will you actually accomplish that?
Well, the Board of Elections we're going to go through a process, and they're going to open the ballots and count them. And, we're going to be part of that process and respect that process.
You've run for county legislature, obviously. Running for state assembly was the biggest office you've run for before. What did you learn about that level of politics during this campaign? What did you hear from voters about what their, number one issue is?
Well, I think what I heard a lot from voters, and what I think the results really show, is that voters are really sick of the status quo. Voters are sick of the same type of business as usual politics. And, this race, one thing that's different from a local county legislator race, this race had a lot of money poured into it. There was over $20,000 of outside spending from an anti-union group from California putting in mailers for my opponents. I didn't take any corporate donations. We ran a good campaign, just reaching out to the voters and getting our message out there. So, it's different in that way. But we're proud of the campaign we ran and, feel very good about it.
Have you had a chance to speak with Assemblyman McDonald yet?
I haven't spoken with him yet. Not since the results have come in.
Yeah, is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to add, Sam?
We're feeling very confident. We're feeling confident. At the same time, there's a lot of uncertainty. We just want to make sure all the votes are counted. We're looking forward to that process.
This is one of those to-be-continued podcasts as we wait for those absentee ballots. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening, and stay safe. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.